Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
Good evening, everybody, on this lovely July 28th evening. It is 11 p.m. on the Eastern Conference, but we have none other than Aaron Fishman from Cowbell Kingdom joining us today to talk a little bit of hoops going around the world. What's going on today, Aaron?
Hey, Jacob. Thanks for having me on. I'm just excited to talk about basketball, even in the summer.
I know. It's you know, it's the off season. It's, you know, looking for stories to talk about, and, you know, we've been lucky enough, I feel, this season to have a lot to talk about. You know, we can go down the list of items that have come up and down, and it's just been a crazy summer, and it's not over.
Yeah, I think it's been increasingly like that over the last years and even decades, where the NBA is increasingly a year-long event and discussion, with the exception of maybe a month or something in, I don't know, in August or so, but yeah, so many exciting things with Summer League, getting more eyes on it, and just all the off-season craziness.
Well, I would say, listen, don't bring the negative Nancy's in here already. You talk about August being a slow month. No way. The NBA is just getting started. But before we move on, I believe this is the first pull-up podcast in quite a while, and we apologize. So Josh Eberle, who is a host who hosts Monday nights, was on a vacation for a few weeks, you know? It's all summertime. Take some time off. And on top of that, we have some news that our good friend, not going anywhere, he's still alive, Snotty Drippin, has moved on to the Basketball Breakdown website and has started his own podcast over there. So he would no longer be doing a pull-up podcast episode. So I know some people are probably a little bummed out about that, but we still got some great hosts and we still got the great guests. And he's actually going to be on next week. So if you miss him, he'll come back. So, you know, we wish Snotty the best, and we're going to obviously stick around and talk to him. But we're here to talk to Aaron. And there's, I think, the biggest story coming out of this offseason has been DeAndre Jordan. And
has to be.
You're based in L.A., so you probably hear, which is an interesting city in terms of basketball, Aaron, because you have both the Lakers and Clippers, and I can imagine they probably don't like each other. So you have two sides of every story, in a sense. So my first question to you is, like, what is your first reaction to this whole DeAndre Jordan situation? Now that the dust has settled, he wrote his article in the Players Tribune on Derek Jeter's website. You heard Mark Cuban's comment after that. What is your first reaction being in L.A., hearing both sides of the story?
Well, before all the stuff came out, my initial reaction when I heard that he was strongly considering the Clippers again, about a week after he had verbally committed to the Mavericks, I was shocked. Obviously, we know that until your signature is on paper, it's not final. But I think, and we've seen it in the past, players go back on their commitment.
Carlos Boozer.
Exactly, and a few others, but I mean, I think along with everyone, I thought, okay, he made the wrong, first of all, I thought he made the wrong decision initially to go to the Mavericks, just because of his style of play and his game, so dependent on a point guard feeding him lobs, a good interior big man passing him the ball like Griffin. He doesn't really post up, at least at this stage of his career. So I thought he made the wrong decision. And then along with everyone, I was just, my jaw fell to the floor when I heard, okay, he did a 180. It looks like now he's going to the Clippers. And to him not even call Cuban or give the Mavericks even a chance, that was surprising too. He didn't owe them a chance to convince him. Again, if he decided the Clippers, that's fine. But I thought it was tactless on his part to not have him or his agent tell Cuban. He just shut him out completely, and I thought that was wrong.
Well, it's going to come back to bite him in the ass, because, you know, Cuban's a very powerful person. And, you know, DeAndre Jordan got his money. He's going to have some mediocre seasons in L.A. He's going to get paid a whole crap ton of money to play out in L.A. So he's winning in that sense. But and my flip side to that is I don't think Dallas should have went after him. So to me, this is a win-win for everybody besides the Clippers, in my opinion, because I think, you know, it's going to benefit them over the short term, the next 2 to 3 years, because it's a style of play. They depend on his defensibility. You know, he takes a lot of the defensive responsibility off of Blake Griffin, who we can talk about defensive, you know, abilities down the road when we watch next season. But DeAndre Jordan takes a lot of that pressure off. And at the flip side of it, you know, for him, he gets a lot of those easy baskets, as you mentioned. You know, if he's just cleaning up the rim, you know, he's one of the best at it. So he's going to get a lot of opportunities
yeah.
to do that. So for him to keep the best stats was staying in L.A. Why Dallas
I agree
went after
with
him? Yeah, I feel like Dallas went after him just because they wanted to make the splash. Because it's Mark Cuban, it's a flashy team. He needs to bring a name in every time. And if he doesn't, he's seen as a failure. But at least here, he looks good doing it because he went after him. He offered him the most money he could. The player just changed his mind and went back. And, you know, the player looks bad. The Mavericks and Cuban look good, and they move on a different direction and maybe can take a year, you know, take a step back and look forward to rebuilding. But
the one issue, the one thing I take issue with what you said was that he's going to have a couple of mediocre seasons in L.A. I agree.
Oh,
I think we're pretty much in agreement with each other on this. I mean, he has a certain role, and he does it well, probably better than anyone, averaging 15 rebounds a game, almost three block shots per game.
Well,
and for
well,
that
Aaron,
team,
what I meant by mediocre is
it's how you frame it. He's not going to be an offensive star. Right, right.
Well, no, seasons 4 and 5. He's going to be good the next couple of years for them. He's going to do the same thing, you know, be a double-double guy, you know, top-tier defensive player, which is all they need. You know, it's the modern-day Ben Wallace, but with size. But
yeah.
I'm talking about years 4 or 5 on that contract. He's
I don't
gonna
think
be...
they care about that, though, is my
well,
point. Because,
you know, and
so
don't.
He had a 4-year contract where he can opt out after 3, and they feel, and you and I know the West is stacked, so whether
he's
they're a title
out.
Contender or not, it's debatable. But I think the Clippers feel... I mean, I'm sure they feel like they're a championship contender with him. They're that close to a championship. They were screwed if they lost him. And now, considering how they rounded out the bench, with him running the lanes in transition, cleaning up the boards, guarding the interior, I don't think they're thinking of down the line how much money they're owed to him. They just had to secure him for the here and now. And he's only, 26 or so? So he won't be that old toward the end of the contract, but 7-footers are injury prone. I know. I just think that that right now it's the right decision. It's also how you frame what his limit is. Earlier, when he initially made the decision to sign with the Mavericks verbally, it was being reported that he wanted to be the franchise player, the 1 or 2 scorer on a team going down the line, after Dirk retired along with Chandler Parsons. And in my opinion, I don't think DeAndre Jordan has that capability going forward.
Oh, he doesn't.
I think you'd agree with that, right?
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I'm saying it's a blessing in disguise for the Mavericks. And to me, this is like the perfect PR thing for the Mavericks that ever happened, because they made every effort to sign this guy. So to the fans and to the Mavericks fans, you know, they tried to get this guy. And then he just turned their back on them. In reality, they probably shouldn't want him in general, because as we pointed out throughout this is, you know, the style of play he has. But my question to you is, and I haven't heard this from many people, I believe it's because the two players I'm going to scrutinize in a second are very likable. They're very likable by the average person, the average NBA fan. And so my question to you is, you know, the Clippers are on the brink of – making the NBA Finals appearance. They're on the brink. They've been there for the past 3-4 years. Ever since they got Chris Paul with Blake Griffin, they've been on the brink. They're trying to figure it out. Now they got the coach. The coach is trying to fill out the rest of the team. I just don't feel that there's that sense of urgency from those guys. And I have a long theory on one of them. The second one's a little younger. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. But I have a long theory on Chris Paul. And he goes along with Carmelo Anthony theory. They're just not winners. And during this whole free agency, you know, they were all vacationing, fine. But you look around the league for winners and you see, like, you know, Tim Duncan showing up for the Marcus Aldridge, and, you know, meeting, and Tony Parker's at that meeting. You go around the table, around the league, every other star player was showing up to recruit. Chris Paul and Blake were not found until Doc Rivers said, hey, guys, like, do you want to lose this guy and put more of a burden on you guys, or do you need this guy? So I just want to ask your opinion on what you're hearing from the Laker fans, the Clipper fans, everybody that's based in L.A. on that kind of the story.
Well, first to respond to that, before I say what I've been hearing, I couldn't disagree with you more. So I think that's a great point for you to bring up, because we'll hear different perspectives on this. But I think that's kind of a hot sports take. I don't agree with it at all. LeBron James was on vacation too. He never gets flack for any of that. And now that you see what Chris Paul and Blake Griffin did, they cut their vacation short to go in and save Jordan, to keep him on their team. They made every effort to go there. Chris Paul wants to win like no other. He's the biggest competitor that I know of in the NBA, or at least on a short list. So you telling me that he doesn't do enough to win in the off season, if that's what you were saying, that's surprising to me, and I don't buy it. If you want to say that he's crumbled in clutch situations, there have been a few times, like against the Thunder, when he turned the ball over in the backcourt, but statistically in the playoffs, he's been great. So if we're talking about
that,
on the court, I don't think we can say on the court. Go ahead.
No, Chris Paul is one of the few elite players whose statistics drop come playoffs. Like, they just drop off. And
they don't.
His whole entire history. Oh, they do. They do. Let's go pull it up. I mean, his stats drop off come playoffs. Compared to the regular season playoffs, his stats drop off career-wise.
I don't think that's true, but...
They always have.
I don't want to pick out anecdotal evidence, because obviously a larger sample size and better evidence is more important. But the Spurs series is a perfect example of what he does in big moments. He was hobbled with a hamstring injury, returns late in the game. On one leg, he carries the Clippers. He makes the game-winning bank shot over, I believe it was Tim Duncan, in Game 7 to beat the defending champion Spurs. And that's what he's done. In past years, the Clippers were a little bit younger. Blake Griffin didn't have the all-around game that he has. So I don't think we can put that all on Chris, but they haven't gotten there. But at this point, there's no excuses left. If the Clippers don't win a championship, they're going to have to answer to their owner, their coach, their fans, because we saw 2 years ago to the Thunder in the semifinals, where they were tied. The series was tied at 2. They blew Game 5. This year, up 3-1 against the Houston Rockets, they blow it. So they're out of excuses now. Finally, they have the bench. Doc Rivers.
So let me ask you this.
I've been disappointed.
I got two questions. We'll bang the Clippers out and move on. One.
Okay.
Do you think the Clippers are better this season than the previous year?
Yes. I can explain, or just answer yes.
If you want to give a quick explanation, go for it.
Yeah, I'll be brief, but they have the depth that they didn't have last season. To give an example, one of their blowouts over the Rockets in the playoffs, it was garbage time, yes, but they had Ekpe Udo, Spencer Hawes, who was terrible last year, and Hedo Turkoglu all on the court, those three guys all on the court at the same time. This year, they've solidified their bench, adding Lance Stephenson, Josh Smith, et cetera. They have Paul Pierce, veteran, and a proven winner in the league. So they have the bench this year that they lacked and was probably the reason for their demise last postseason.
Now, the next question for the Clippers, for everybody out there, do the Clippers win a title with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin?
So I'm going to say just that they do.
Well, no, just in general, do they win a title? Like you said, if they do not win a title, then,
you
know,
yeah,
then,
do you want
they have to answer to that. Like, in your honest opinion, do you think those two guys together win a title? That's it. It can be Clippers or anywhere else.
I don't like making declarative statements or predictions. If I had to say, I would say that they do. But the West is so stacked. When I look at it on paper, the Golden State Warriors have to be in the conversation. They won the championship, coasted to a championship, kind of. The Cavaliers, so injury-prone, still made the finals, and they're continuing to improve their roster. And you have the Spurs, who added David West, and they're the Spurs. Thunder, Kevin Durant.
They added LaMarcus Aldridge, too.
Exactly. That's more important. And Houston Rockets making moves, added Ty Lawson, Memphis Grizzlies always in the conversation. I see the Clippers as kind of like in that top four tier of the West, but it's hard for me to see any one team that stands out. So that's why I'm not comfortable saying that, yes, they will win a championship. I think that they do. I don't know if it's this season, but their time is running out with Paul Griffin together. Those guys can opt out a couple years down the line. So, no excuses left if they don't win in the coming year.
Hey, let's flip over here because we've got another offseason to talk about. We have a interesting team, which is a website you edit for, Cowbell Kingdom. The Sacramento Kings have had a very interesting offseason. And speaking of a guy who ended up signing with the Clippers but didn't sign with the Kings, I would have loved it to have the best friends all together. I would have loved to see Rajon Rondo, Josh Smith, and Rudy Gay all playing together, having a good old time up in. I would have become the biggest Kings fan if that happened, but it didn't happen. But they still have some interesting things to talk about because we had the fun with George Karl and DeMarcus Cousins, who we saw them shaking hands at Summer League and playing nice.
Awkwardly.
We have Rajon Rondo going up there to try to save his career. It's just an interesting off season, and they signed some veterans. They got, you know, Caron Butler up there. It's just an older roster, a George Karl style roster. So my first question to you would be is, if you're a Kings fan, what are your expectations for this upcoming season? Do you know, what kind of win total should you expect around? What kind of team do you expect around? Like, it's just completely changed.
It's a good question. It's something different than they've done in past years, where they're adding guys that have won championships in Rondo, Caron Butler, and just more veterans. They used to be heavily dependent on young players. So it's obvious what they're trying to do is build around Cousins, who's ready. His game is ready to win. He's Rudy Gay, too. But the problem is the logjam in the West. And you're gambling on Rondo, who's clearly lost the step right now. And kind of similar to what you said about DeAndre Jordan and the Mavericks, I think the Kings should be glad that they missed out on Monte Ellis, because he's another ball-dominating player, just like Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins. If you ask GMs around the league what the Kings need and don't need, another ball dominator is number one on the list of what they should avoid. Rudy Gay stops the ball sometimes, just backs down players. Cousins does the same. They added Willie Cauley-Stein in the draft, who's going to be a shot blocker and rebounder that they hope to pair with Cousins. But to answer your question, I think realistically Kings fans can expect around 8 to 11 seed out West. I don't expect them to make the playoffs because there's so many up-and-coming young teams and teams with more continuity that I think will finish ahead of them. But they have a solid roster that they filled out with Costa Cupas. They have Marco Bellinelli they've added. I don't think Seth Curry will necessarily play that much, but it's interesting to me that
David
they've added
Stockton,
him.
Though. They have David Stockton, arguably the son of the greatest point guard ever. Now, I'm obviously being facetious. It is an interesting roster because, you know, we obviously bring up the point of the two ball stoppers, which is DeMarcus Cousins, which I have no problem with a big man being a ball stopper because him being a ball stopper creates so much more space. His ability to hold the ball down there would create space for the guards, which brings us to our flip side here is Rajon Rondo is good in a motion style of offense. And we have him, we have Rudy Gay, DeMarcus Cousins. It doesn't really flow well, and it's going to be interesting to see maybe Rajon Rondo adapts to this kind of offense. But in order for him to do that, he's going to have to shoot the ball better, which has been his biggest Achilles heel, outside of his actual Achilles heel. He needs to shoot the ball and to make the opponent, you know, respect it a little bit.
Yeah,
but they just sagged so badly. They just sagged so badly off him that I don't know how much it's going to help them. And plus, to go into Rudy Gay, I feel like Rudy Gay is best in this style of the NBA, being a four. And so if you got him and Cousins in the paint, that's when Rondo's most efficient. He worked at Boston because Kendrick Perkins was not a scorer, and Kevin Garnett was settling for those jump shots. So the paint was Rajon Rondo's. All he needed was a high pick from Garnett. You know, Perkins is down there to create some more space, and Rondo can get into the paint. And since that is gone, we've just seen his career go down, which is a shame because he's such a great passer. But at least in terms of the fans, I think the game's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. I mean, they're not expecting anything. And, you know, they got a good rookie in there, Willie Cauley-Stein, Beltonham. You know, it's an interesting roster all around. Like, it's mixed young and old, and it's really going to be how well they mesh.
There's definitely a lot of intrigue around what they're doing because they haven't made the playoffs in 8 or 9 seasons. So that fan base is longing for wins again. And they're going to need Rondo to show up big time. It's important for his career, having signed a 1-year deal there, trying to prove his worth league-wide. And it'll be interesting to follow. But they're going to need outside shooters to do their thing. That's another area, three-point shooting, that they've been lacking in. Three-point shooting and turnovers in past years.
Right.
Bellinelli certainly will help in that regard from beyond the arc. They're going to need Ben McLemore again to shoot better like he did last year. But kind of like what you're saying, you need a space and spread the floor for guys like Gay and Cousins. Rondo certainly doesn't do that. Maybe he'll start hitting his mid-range shots. Probably not. But they're going to need those shooters to spread the floor.
So we're going to jump into a new segment, which we're doing on this podcast. And I hope Josh is listening, and I hope he uses this clip because I think it's pretty interesting and pretty fun. This is a new segment called Headlines. We're just going to update you on what's going around the NBA world. This is Headlines. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the NBA world. It's the offseason. Players are vacationing. They're in Israel. They're on Twitter. They're coaxing other players to come join them. They're doing their charities, their fashion. This is the fun time for the NBA world, in my opinion, off the court at least. And the first thing that has to go front and center is the best player in the world, LeBron James, did a little bit of Q&A on Twitter today around 7 p.m. It's about 4.5 hours ago, he did a little Q&A. I have not been able to read it, but it's just a little FYI. Go look on his Twitter. The only segment I got off of it, because I saw someone else retweet it, is someone asked LeBron James, who or what teams are the toughest offenses to guard? And he went down the list. He listed 5 teams. He said San Antonio, Golden State Warriors, obviously. This is the shocker. The Boston Celtics. 4, Atlanta Hawks, makes sense with Kyle Korver. The way they did this year, it makes sense. And then the Miami Heat is another one that made sense. It did make sense. I feel like that was just like a, you know, here's my friends. I'm going to say they're very tough to guard. So what do you take away out of this list, Aaron? These 5 teams are the toughest offenses in terms of LeBron James' opinion in guarding. And, you know, if you're... You know, if you're any other high-paced offense, you kind of feel like disregarded, like Houston. You don't think Houston's disrespected in this?
I don't think they care what LeBron James is saying on Twitter, but that is an interesting list. Celtics, surprising to me. They have a lot of young guys. Isaiah Thomas. I don't know. It just seems like he just put together that list kind of quickly, and like you said, maybe for other. He had other motives behind it,
he might have been thinking of 2008 Celtics.
He didn't specify if it was this season. You're right.
Right, he didn't specify which year.
So the Warriors and Clippers were not on that list.
Heat,
right?
Yeah, which would obviously be this year.
Oh, the Warriors were.
Spurs,
okay.
Golden State Warriors. Spurs, obviously, just longevity. Atlanta Hawks, most likely this season. Miami Heat. He could have been talking about himself. You're right. Could have been talking about this year. Those are tough teams to guard. But I will say he's not far off of the Celtics, though. You know, they haven't had a star. It's kind of a, it's a system offense. It's probably the best college offense we've seen played at a professional level. And you know, that's exactly what it is. He doesn't have any stars. So Brad Stevens is using a system that he developed at the college level, tweaked it to make it work for the NBA level, and people are thriving. I mean, we've seen career bests out of some of these players. Like, he's made Evan Turner relevant again, which is very shocking.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so LeBron did a little Q&A on Twitter. Everybody should go check it out. I'm sure to check it out probably tomorrow on my lunch break and see what's going on with that. The second news kind of relates to LeBron James again because it's, hey, it's LeBron's world. We're just living in it. And this was a stat that came out today on a Business Insider, I believe, or, you know, one of those financial websites. But they looked at every minute during the NBA Finals, the Cleveland Cavaliers on eBay sold $9 per minute for merchandise. At that same rate, $21 per minute of LeBron James gear was sold. So that's just kind of a little... shows you LeBron is biggest money maker to the Cavs, which is not a shocker, but it's always fun when you see it in, like, dollars and cents. So that tells me, like, every minute someone bought a knockoff LeBron James jersey.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like hearing those statistics. It's kind of like Jordan when he was dominating the league. Those rare star players, they bring in serious dollars, and I always love for it to be quantified in those terms.
It's insane, but, you know, that's why I have no problem with getting rid of a salary cap. And, you know, if you want to pay LeBron James $60 million for a year, that's on you, but you're clearly going to make it back, so that's not the issue. this next story has been going on for about a few weeks now, to my understanding, but I feel like I should post it today because one of the people involved actually came out, and I believe it was on Sirius XM Radio, and talked about it. And this is a feud on Instagram by two NBA Hall of Famers, Scottie Pippen and Shaquille O'Neal. And they've been going back and forth, dogging each other. Shaq's basically calling Pippen a second fiddle. Pippen's saying Shaq ain't nothing. They were debating something earlier this week with if you took the best Lakers of all time versus the best Bulls of all time, who wins? I think you and I probably agree the best Lakers team beats the best Bulls team of all time. It's been going on for a while, and it's just weird. I'm just waiting for something that they're promoting. What are they promoting? I don't know. Is this real beef on Instagram?
Like, I think they're promoting themselves mostly, just trying to get their names back there relevant. I mean, obviously star players in the league, but it seems like more of an ego thing. I haven't really paid that much attention to it. I've heard about it, obviously, on Twitter and just in the news and people discussing, debating. I kind of think of that as like when someone comes up to you and wants to debate who's the best player of all time. Is it LeBron, Kobe, Michael Jordan, someone else? And
oh, it's clearly Robert Horry, but that's another thought. Sorry for another day.
I think, yeah. But... I don't usually want to have that conversation. It's kind of like the same thing. I'd rather talk about the NBA in the here and now than look back. I mean, it's interesting to look back if it's something that's been uncovered or underreported. But, I mean, this stuff has been debated at great lengths. I don't think there's any new interesting stuff coming to the fore.
Right. To me, I think the biggest story out of this feud is how well they both Photoshop. They're very good at Photoshopping.
They are good at it. I'm terrible.
Yeah, I'm terrible.
I mean, I don't know if they have a team that's working with them or not. I'm not privy to that, but it's interesting that they're so adept at getting that done.
Right. The next headline we have, and this is probably breaking news, that Tariq Black, member of the Los Angeles Lakers, he had his height rescinded by the NBA today. He was previously listed as 6'11", and they actually came in and said, no, he's actually 6'9". So we just wanted to let everybody know, for those keeping track at home, heavy fantasy basketball drafts coming up, Tariq Black is actually only 6'9". So, you know,
he's trying 2 inches this offseason?
Yes. So So they, no, the NBA fact checks their height and their weight and such. So they, you know, they're very on the ball of making sure everybody's, you know, not sneaking in any little stilts here and lying on their height. But so Tariq Black is actually 6'9". The next piece.
That's an interesting story. 2 inches. You would think that it would be only one or something. A slight adjustment.
I feel like it would have been. I feel like it should. I feel like it's a hair thing or maybe the shoe. I really don't know. I didn't get too into it. I was handed the press release. I was told to announce it tonight, so I did.
I should have brought an afro to the measurement.
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, just shame all involved. You know, military stuff.
Bring your A game. Stand on your toes. Do what you have, whatever you have to do. Now in today's NBA, 6'11 versus 6'9". I mean, post players are not as important, but a guy like that can lose him serious dollars.
Well, you know what, Aaron? They're basically the same freaking size. You see, like, a team photo these days, and you're like, wait, the power forward's in the middle, and he's shorter than the wingman? Like,
yeah.
Draymond Green is 6'7", and he's your power forward. But that's just the way the NBA is this day. Like, they're all – essentially, a basketball team, they're all the same size, outside of maybe, you know, the 6 foot to 6 foot four point guards. That range,
I have
you can see they're a little
on
smaller.
My driver's license. Yeah.
See, there you go. Perfect. You're an NBA player.
6'4", but I'm really, like, 5'9½".
I've been trying to lie about my height on my driver's license. It's not working out well. They just take an inch off every time I lie. It's not worth it. Not worth it. All right, the next set of news is a very good post, by the way. Highly recommend it. Came out today by none other than Zach Lowe. If you're not reading Zach Lowe, that's on you. You should know this by now if you're an NBA fan. But he had a really good post on the Charlotte Hornets, which he called the Good Charlotte, ? He had a longer title than that, but he basically just looked at, you know, what the Hornets are doing, the fact that they traded 6 first-round draft picks or refused 6 first-round draft picks for this first-round draft pick and last year's first-round draft pick, and how they're just standing firm and they're taking these players, the players they're taking are panning out, what are they doing in terms of the offseason. It's a really good post. I don't want to really ruin everything for you, but basically one of the main points in that kind of caught wind was he said that he's not sure about Nicholas Batum's, you know, motivation playing for the Bobcats, I guess. You know, you playing with the Portland Trailblazers, you're in the playoffs in the West, you had high hopes. All of a sudden that team just dismantles, sends you to Charlotte, to the freaking Hornets, a team that, you know, made the playoffs during Joe Wallace's heyday. And I don't blame Zach Lowe for his comment because, you know, what are you really thinking? This is, you know, an NBA veteran. He's on a final year of his deal. He's probably just looking to move on and get to a winning team again. But anyways, credit to Nicholas Batum. He came out on Twitter and had some very funny memes. He had, like, an "Oh, really" meme with that Saturday Night Live, which, what's the guy's name? He has his own show now. Whatever his name is, he does Saturday Night Live news anchor, and then he said, "Oh, really?" And then above it, he said, "Just to make it clear," and he put a Hornets look. So,
I know who you're talking about. Yeah,
I can't think of it. Seth Meyers. Is that right?
Well, he was one of the anchors. I don't know. Is that? Oh, yeah, that is. Okay, yeah, he does do that.
Yeah, he used to do the. Yeah, okay.
He does that on his late night show now. Yeah.
Right. So it was Seth Meyers, and it's like, "Oh, really?" And the top one was the Charlotte Hornets logo. And it said, "Just to make it clear," so basically it was a hitting code, but everybody knew what he's talking about. I talked about Zach Lowe's piece, but I highly recommend reading it. You got some really good quotes from Rich Cho, who was the GM of the Hornets. You have the VP of basketball operations in the Hornets. The names just slipped me. But they're all talking to Zach Lowe, discussing their philosophy and what happened behind the deal and, you know, were these offers really what they were? Were they really, you know, lived up to what they're supposed to be? But very good post and kind of looks into the rebuilding of the Charlotte Hornets, but also the rebuilding of the NBA in whole. Do you tank for lottery draft picks? Do you, you know, build this mediocre team? You know, is it better to make the playoffs and get knocked out? Like, it is a whole look of how those, you know, bottom 20 teams try to get up to the top 10. It's a very good piece, and I think it's something that people debate constantly. And I've debated with many friends about this and how to do it. And I actually like the way the Celtics are doing it, you know, just continuously grab pieces instead of just trying to win the lottery. And I don't know what your opinion on that, Aaron, is. Like, you know,
yeah,
you're based in L.A. You've seen a team like the Lakers who just open the doors and any celebrity walks in, or you have a team like the Clippers who have actually had to do it by drafting and trades.
Yeah, I go back and forth. It seems like nowadays, like, if there's one transcendent star, like an Anthony Davis, for example, he can change the course of your franchise just by drafting a guy like that. But those players are so rare that unless you're willing to tank and tank badly for a long time, like the 76ers or something, and continually get high draft picks and disappoint your your fans in the process for going in pursuit of the home run swing like that, it makes more sense, I think. It can make more sense to go after free agents or through the draft, like the Thunder did years ago with Westbrook, Thunder, and then Durant when he was on the Sonics, with the Sonics. But it really depends on it's contingent on your franchise. Some markets players just don't go to, it seems like, unless they're good. But like the Sacramento Kings have struggled mightily for the last decade or so to get any good free agent signing, it seems like.
Well, and this is where there's two things to this. I might take the rest of the podcast to talk about this topic right here. But I want to start on the drafting aspect of it. That, you know, go to the lottery. You have the majority of those teams who go that route. I think of the Bulls prior to Derrick Rose. You know, they had like 7 years where they were in the top five of the draft picks. So they grabbed guys like Tyrus Thomas and Kirk Heinrich, and you can sit here and blame the poor drafting. But you look around the table, you know, when we looked at the Clippers' poor drafting, they had, you know, a bunch of top picks for many years prior to Blake Griffin. Didn't really do much with
them. Yeah.
You know, you can go around the world and look at this. And I'm going to pick two teams who I think people are believing in their philosophy. And you mentioned one of them, that's the Sixers, and the other one's the Orlando Magic. You know, do they have a star out of both of those rosters? And, you know, it remains to be seen. It's not guaranteed that the Sixers have found, you know, the next Shaquille O'Neal, because they keep drafting big guys. But they have not found the next Shaquille O'Neal. We don't know this yet. And that's the thing. And you mentioned it greatly when you said Anthony Davis, because I feel like Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Shaquille O'Neal, those are guys that were just guarantees. Like, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, when LeBron James came to the league, no one doubted him. And, in fact, the rest of the draft was so deep that they all became stars with him. But there was no doubt about it. And until that no doubt about it comes along, and there hasn't been one since, I would almost say Dwight Howard, but even then, he hasn't won, but he's at least been a sure thing. You knew what you get when you got Dwight Howard. Since Dwight, there really hasn't been a sure thing, number one. And then the flip side of it, you have the issue where you mentioned Kings. And, you know, the Celtics have this for a while. I feel like most teams who've never won a title have this. Just, you can't get somebody to come to you. How do you get somebody to go to Minnesota? We saw LeBron left Cleveland, and we made the jokes about South Beach and the beach and the warm weather. And, you know, forget winters. Why does anybody want to live in winter? When you're a multimillionaire, you can live wherever you want. So why not pick an NBA team that's south, you know, warmer weather? But at that same time, I feel like nowadays teams want to win. So we're seeing teams sign with teams because they want to win. It has nothing to do with weather. Like, the fact that LaMarcus Aldridge signed in San Antonio, and I know he's from Texas and he's got family there, but he signed to San Antonio, which is a tiny market, has no other professional sports. He's not getting a large endorsement down there with Adidas or, you know, none of those outside extracurricular NBA revenues are coming in being in San Antonio. You know, the most you got to do is that local television down there, that milk commercial, that I can't even think of, Publix or, you know, whatever the food store place down there is called. I honestly forget what it is, but they have a hilarious commercial. you know, outside of that, what is he really going to get outside of, you know, for the outside money? But I feel like teams are going with the wins, and going back to the Kings, and I think this was somewhat changing with the Celtics. I think they need one more year of it, because even LeBron James mentioned Brad Stevens in an interview this past year. You have to be able to prove to a star you can win, because if we're going around the table. We talked about it earlier before. Chris Paul, you know, Blake Griffin's not getting any younger. These guys are going to want to win. Carmelo Anthony, how long has Carmelo Anthony been striving to get on a team that gets in the playoffs every single year so he has a chance to win his title? You know, you win a title, you're a sure thing in the Hall of Fame. Right now, Chris Paul, Melo, probably going to be in the Hall of Fame. You know? But get that title, it puts you in. So I feel like the demographics of going after free agents has changed. It's not only you go to the Lakers, you go to Chicago, or you go to New York. It's where can I win? Money's coming regardless. Where do I win?
Yeah, they're going to make their money. And LaMarcus Aldridge, he made a basketball decision. I think you're right. San Antonio just has the winning culture lately. Popovich will stay longer. They have Kawhi Leonard, young and hungry, and he's going to be good for years to come. But, I mean, there's a lot of things you could talk about. There is no state tax in Texas. So sometimes that is a sweetener for some free agents going there. But he's going to get paid regardless. You said it, and you're right.
All right, so let's sponsor on these other news. I know I went on a spiel there for a minute. Vin Baker is making a comeback. The comeback he is making is he is looking to manage a Starbucks. So from the Pull Up Podcast, the Hoops Critic team, we wish you the best, Vin, in your new endeavors. If you're a four-time All-Star in the NBA, you can be a one-time All-Star managing the best Starbucks in your city. So that's what Vin Baker's up to. We have some other news, too. I mean, so many headlines in the offseason. Amir Johnson picked number 90 for the Boston Celtics. And when asked why he picked number 90, he said basically every number 1 through 34 is retired. That was his explanation. And when he comes to the Celtics, which is a big problem, by the way, I've been talking about this with fellow Celtic people up here. It's a problem. You have to not retire so many numbers. I mean, Michael Jordan and LeBron James are never going to be a Celtic because you don't have 6 or 23 available. Actually, I think the Celtics had 23, but either way, it's a stupid joke. So Amir Johnson, not happy with the numbers, picks number 90. I think of Dennis Rodman. I hope he dies there, becomes a wild man, dominates defensively and rebounds like Dennis Rodman. What other news do we got here?
You want to talk about Paul Pierce, or are we not there?
Oh, no, I was going to get to that. I got those two queued up for you, buddy. I'm not jumping ahead here. I feel like there's something else you're supposed to say. No. So the Kings are in Israel. Have you been following along?
I saw that. Omri Caspi took some of his teammates there.
Yeah, he took Caron Butler. He took Boogie Cousins. I saw them floating in the Dead Sea. They were at the Western Wall. They were checking out where Jesus is buried. I don't know the name of that. Forgive me. I've actually been to Israel. I don't know if you've ever been to Israel.
I have. I went about 4 years ago.
Oh, sweet. I went in 2004. I left December 2004. I was back 2005, January. Very interesting country, I would say the least. So it's pretty cool they're out there doing a team bonding exercise. And, this is just brings more to the aura that is the Sacramento Kings. Is this team going to be in the Western Conference Finals, or is this team getting, 15th seed in the Western Conference where they're just the worst team in the world? Nobody knows.
I think probably somewhere in the middle of that.
I don't know. I mean, I play the teams so polarizing. They're either just going to win the title and shut us all up. And the sad thing is, they have the talent in a sense. You know, they have the premier center. They have a elite point guard at his best. They got Rudy Gay. If they can get the best of Rudy Gay, if they can get the best of everybody, you know, you're looking at a really good team, but probably not happening. But let's segue on to the last thing here that we have, which I didn't even hear about this. You texted me this today, and this is why I was like, you know what? Yep, we're going to close headlines with this because it's very interesting here. Paul Pierce, born in Inglewood, California, grew up a Laker fan, drafted by the Boston Celtics because every other team ahead of him slated him, turned out to be a perennial All-Star, a NBA Finals MVP, three-point contest champion. You know, he's had a career like none other for the Bucks. He then becomes a free agent. Oh, I'm sorry. He gets traded to the Brooklyn Nets, has a couple of crappy years down there. Probably hates that whole arrangement there. But he won his boys, tried to win a title. Didn't work because terrible coach and terrible GM. It just didn't work. Became a free agent, signed with the Washington Wizards. Became a hero, folk legend for Washington Wizards fans in the postseason last year. Ripping the hearts out of every Canadian, including rapper who's currently in a beef with Meek Mill. Ripped his heart out. And then decided to opt out of a second year. Said, no, I'm not going to go do this anymore. I'm going to go with my boy, Doc Rivers. I'm going to go with the Clippers. The reason he picked the Clippers, because he wanted to go to L.A. He couldn't pick the Lakers because he's not a Laker fan anymore. Aaron, from that point on, he was at the Dodger game. Take it away.
It was Clippers night at Dodger Stadium tonight, and he got booed like crazy. And it's funny, maybe a little sad, but, I mean, it's happened before. Chris Paul, Clippers star, was booed. Predominantly Lakers fans in Los Angeles still, even with the Lakers not doing very well in recent years and the Clippers in the playoffs each year. And that's just what happens. That's what happens if you're a Clipper. People, some may say it's turning into a Clipper town. It's not yet. And I don't know if it'll ever be with the Lakers franchise history and all those decades of woe in Clipper land. But that, what are you going to do? You're a future Hall of Famer? You still get booed.
It sounds like a terrible time to be a Clipper fan in. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with you guys.
Sure, it's great to have you back on board, Mark.
It's great to be back.
Hey, my old notebook.
Let me see that.
You don't want to look at that. That's boring.
It's draft notes.
Oh, let me get it.
No. Curry. Too short, too slow.
Did I say that? I wouldn't call
with
you
luck,
that.
Maybe a career in Turkey?
You know, Turkey's pretty competitive right now.
ESPN, your NBA destination for games Wednesdays and Fridays.
All right, we're back with a little quick break there. I cannot thank my guests enough for coming on today. Aaron Fishman, he is at Cowbell Kingdom. He is the editor there. If you want your Kings news, especially this season, you know, they got the new stadium. Point guard, I've just forgot his name, Kenny
Rondo.
Johnston. No,
Kevin
Kenny Johnston is not being sued for coercion or some legal matter with getting the stadium approved. So if you need your Kings news, this is going to be a fun season. You got Rajon Rondo there, you got Rudy Gay there, you got DeMarcus Cousins there. Those three characters are enough to follow this season all season long, and you can follow them at
Cousins
for all your news. Aaron Fishman, follow him on Twitter, by the way, guys. It's by, B-Y, Aaron Fish, A-A-R-O-N-F-I-S-C-H, Aaron Fishman here. And Aaron, can't thank you enough for coming on, and I cannot say we're going to have you back here when it comes to Kings problems, because I think it's going to be some problems.
Thanks a lot, Jacob. Yeah, we'll see.
I haven't even mentioned George Karl. Should I mention that one more time? George Karl is going to be there and enjoy the season in Sacramento. It's either going to be really, really good or really, really bad, and either way, it's going to be fun.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.